Last night, I had a dream. When I got to Africa, I had one hell of a rumble. I had to beat Tarzan's behind first for claiming to be the king in the jungle. For this fight, I've wrestled with alligators. I've tussled with a whale. I done handcuffed lightning and put thunder in jail. You know I'm bad. I have murdered a rock. I injured a stone and I hospitalized a brick. I'm so bad, I make medicine sick. I'm so fast, man, I can run through a hurricane and don't get wet. When George Foreman meets me, he'll pay his debt. I can drown a drink of water and kill a dead tree. Wait till you see Muhammad Ali.
You know how great I am. I don't have to tell you about my strategy. I tell my trainer, tell you, Bodine, come here. Bodine, tell him, what are we going to do?
You're going to float like a butterfly and sting like a bee.
Ah, rumble, young man, rumble.
Welcome to Two Old Farts Talk Sci-Fi. I'm David Klink.
And I'm Troy Harkin. And we're pretty stoked for this episode, eh, David, to commemorate Black History Month, which is our first kick at the can, but something we hope to revisit often in the future. And you know what? We want our guest, Wayne, to have the floor as much as possible today, because it's Black History Month, and we are not Black, so we would like to get as much info from Wayne. But I will get this out of the way, as we often do a Beatlism on the show. So I have a quick one that ties in with Black History Month, and that is that when the Beatles first came over to do tours in America, they were kind of horrified to find out that there was segregation in some of the stadiums in the South. And they put it into their contract that they would not play to a segregated audience, that everyone had to have first crack at the tickets, and it would be basically just an evenly mixed audience if possible, because they recognized that the roots of all of their music was basically from Black creators. So they were,
which is most of the rock and roll back in those days.
Yeah, exactly, right? I mean, and most of the music that we have through the 20th century. And also, I'll just throw into a quick one that I'd heard as well, that in the early days of the Rolling Stones doing TV appearances, they insisted that people like Howling Wolf and people who had influenced them, or who created songs that they covered, would also be on the show. Mm-hmm. So people would sort of, you know where the music came from. Anyway, that's it for me on that, David. Should we push on?
Absolutely. We do have a special guest for this episode. Wayne Brown is joining us. Troy, will you be so kind as to play our spoiler alert?
You know what? I'm actually going to hand over the controls of the spoiler alert to Wayne for this episode. So if you would like to push the button, Wayne, feel free.
The spoiler alert button, like here?
Sure. That's the one.
Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert!
Oh, thank you very much, man.
Yeah, thanks.
Was it good for you?
Thanks. Yeah, there's some woman from Germany calling to say, asking you to stop doing that, but just kidding. that was a Stephen Wrightism. Thanks, Troy and Wayne. We are recording the session via Zoom in the interest of transparency. I've known Wayne for a long time, and I've been a guest at Astronomicon, which is a convention that he runs over the years. And I also enjoy playing in the poker tournaments that are held there. Now, to introduce Wayne, mm-hmm. Wayne Brown is a twin, but he's not the evil one.
No,
I'm not. But I do have a twin now, but I'm not the evil
one. He does. Okay. He started reading SF books when he was gifted a copy of Danny Dunn and the Homework Machine. And Danny Dunn and the Anti-Gravity Paint. He started reading comics early on. There was a newsstand down the street from his grandmother's apartment. He thinks it must have been somewhere around 1968. In 1979, he went to his first convention. It was the Chicago Comic-Con. He had just gotten his driver's license and decided after work that he would drive from Rochester to Chicago. He was young. A 12-hour drive was nothing. He got hooked from then on. He got back and started the Rochester Fantasy Fans. And that's been his life ever since.
Yeah. Cool. That's about sums it up.
Sums it up. Well, the future is yet to be written, isn't it?
Yeah, true.
Too Old Farce Talk Sci-Fi is a look back to when we fell in love with a speculative genre to recall these times with fondness and affection. I always like to start an episode with a quote. The quote I picked is, "Bury me in the ocean with my ancestors that jumped from the ships because they knew death was better than bondage." And that was Killmonger's quote from Black Panther. And certainly Black Panther seems to be a very tragic, almost theatrical and Shakespearean character, doesn't he?
Yeah.
I mean,
that's why they, like I said, that's why they brought him back in the new What If series on Disney Plus. It's like they did What If Killmonger had become the Black Panther, and it's great because it's just a great series. If you get to see that episode, you should watch that episode. It is good. And then they did a new one this season too, but it's good.
And I know David and I both did rewatches of Black Panther and prepping for the show. And I was struck by, how well that film stands up to repeated viewings. And my wife was saying that, it's got these great Shakespearean elements to it. And Killmonger is just such a great, a tragic villain. Like, your heart goes out for him, really, towards the end, because we know what he has lived through and why he's become the person he's become. And I also said to David too that that's often the case with a lot of the Marvel villains. They're not, just black and white villainous.
He's a great Magneto.
Yes.
If you look at the Marvel universe, Magneto usually takes over for Professor X when Professor X is out of the off the planet or incapacitated somehow. Usually Magneto takes over the X-Men.
Yeah.
And runs the X-Men.
Yeah. And you're not going to see either Lex Luthor or the Joker running the Justice League, when the other guys are out of town.
Except for he has recently. He's bequeathed all of his money. He got locked up in the prison after Superman came back from Warworld, and he bequeathed all of Lex Luthor's money and influence and everything to Superman. And Superman now runs LexCorp, but it's not LexCorp anymore. It's Superman Corps.
Oh, interesting.
Yes.
Okay. You're going to get me hooked into my Wednesday habit again, aren't you? But I can tell by the end of this conversation.
I'm not giving you any ideas. Yeah. You don't have to go to the comic store and look at anything,
Well, sadly, my two local shops have packed up in the last year. Two of them, just went under. But wow. Anyway. Where are we off to, David?
What we like to do is just know some of the history, your background, Wayne, when it comes to how you were first brought into the whole, because Troy and I love science fiction, fantasy, and horror, all its connections, all of its subheading, all of that.
Yeah.
So we were wondering, what was your first speculative genre memory?
I don't know. I liked Twilight Zone when I was a kid. And Outer Limits was a really scary show when I was a kid. But my show to watch, even above Star Trek, was Lost in Space.
Mm.
Because it had a kid. And I was a kid. So, yeah. And there were kids. So, I liked Lost in Space a lot. So, I used to watch. That was my show to watch, Lost in Space.
It's amazing how much that show connects to people of different ages and different backgrounds. It was a big window to everyone, to the whole science fiction idea.
I remember it used to come on Wednesday nights at 8 o'clock. And yeah.
It was like Swiss Family Robinson in space, almost kind of thing. Yes, that whole family kind of thing. What was the first speculative genre thing that you actually fell in love with and why? Sometimes it's the same thing that you first experienced, but what do you think?
I don't know. There's so much I like in the field. You know, I like comics. I like, I would say gaming, but gaming came way after. I like science fiction and the books and the TV shows, like definitely the TV shows, because it was there every week. So I could just watch Star Trek. I could watch Lost in Space. I could watch Twilight Zone. I could watch Outer Limits. So it was a great time back in the day to watch stuff.
Mm. Absolutely. Thanks, Wayne. We would like to get into your all-time genre faves. Here are some rapid-fire questions about your favorite genre things. We're just looking for titles, but if you feel the urge, you can expand a bit. We do wish to get to talking about Black superheroes soon.
Okay.
For this season, we just ask six favorite categories. And Troy, if you can do these, that would be great.
Oh, I would love to. Wayne, who is your favorite genre author of all time?
Of all time?
Past or present or future?
Oh, let's see. past would have to be, well, my favorite book is The Runaway Robot by Lester Del Rey. Whenever I go to, whenever I'm out looking at used books and I see a copy of it, I'll buy a copy of it. Even though I've got copies of it, I'll just buy another one because I like it so much. I've been reading a lot of Mary Robinette Cowell's Lady Astronaut series, and those are pretty good books. And anything by Rob Sawyer, I buy his books too. So anything by him. Those are the three really authors I definitely follow whenever I can. I've got a lot of Lester Del Rey stuff. I've read The Spare Man by Mary Robinette Cowell, which is in the Lady Astronaut series, but the chapter titles in each chapter is a mixed drink recipe. So it's pretty cool.
Nice.
Okay, so I believe we just got your favorite genre novel, but what about your favorite genre shorter work?
Cold Equations.
Mm.
That's a good one.
Mm.
Sand Kings is another good one.
Oh yeah.
What is it? That's the one with another George R. R. Martin one with berries, death berries. I can't remember what it's called. It was in his Sand Kings collection. I like that too. So I like a lot of stuff.
That's good. That's good. Now here's the, you know, it's hard to nail it down, but all things considered, what would your favorite genre TV show be?
I have a list. And Twilight Zone is number one, followed by, I think, Babylon 5, then Babylon Prisoner, and the Superman animated series and Lost in Space. Those are just because I like those. And then Star Trek is in the top 10. But, yeah.
Excellent. Now, I'm going to throw this in now just because it sort of ties in. Now, clearly Jordan Peele's Twilight Zone is not a comic book and does not involve
No, I include Twilight Zone. It includes all iterations.
Oh, yeah.
The 80s, the 90s, the Jordan Peele ones, the 60s one. Twilight Zone.
Well, let me suggest that you check out our previous two episodes on the Twilight Zone that you can find on your favorite podcast provider. But anyway, I did want to sort of touch on Jordan Peele's Twilight Zone quickly, just specifically relating to Black History Month, the episode 3 replay, in which a mother is trying to drive her son to college, but it is repeatedly harassed by a state trooper.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, officer. We're just taking my son, Dorian, here to his first week of college.
Up at the black school here?
Tennyson. Yes, sir.
Okay. Any weapons in the vehicle? We're just going to college. Your mother conveyed that. I'm asking if there are any weapons presently in this vehicle.
No, sir.
You know why I pulled you over?
I was going too fast.
Since you admitted it, I'll let that go. However, you were operating a handheld device while driving a motor vehicle.
I told him, sir. I'm sorry. My fault.
Is that device recording? Turn off that camera now.
Why? She has the right to film.
Turn it off.
Hold on. Hold on.
Turn it off.
Hold on.
Which, I mean, I found that terrifying. And I can't imagine what it must be like for somebody who can really relate to it. Any thoughts on that episode?
Funny thing is, coming back from, what was it, Ad Astra, or was it Anime North a couple of years ago? You know, I go up to the convention, no problem getting across the border. Coming back, I get stopped, and it's not just stopped. You know, I get stopped at the border crossing, right?
Yeah.
And at the border crossing, where you hand them your passport, or driver's license, whatever, I had passport, hand them my passport, and I have to get out of the car there at the window and walk over to the building, not right. Drive my car over to the building like I've done 50 years ago in the past. But no, I had to get out there and walk across. And then when I get out the car, there's like four or five Border Patrol guys there. And it's like, I don't know what I've done. I haven't done anything. Yeah. And then you go in, and it's like, oh, it's like mistaken identity. It was just somebody else named Wayne Brown.
Oh, no.
Yes.
You must have been sweating.
And it was like somebody else named Wayne Brown, somebody else my age from Rochester. And I says, I did go to with a Wayne Brown. I did go to high school with another Wayne Brown. But he was white, so it couldn't. But then the next week, I went to another convention, I think, in Toronto. And I come back, and I get stopped at the border again. And I have to get out of the car, leave the car there, and walk over to the building. And I just don't sit in the regular part of the building. I have to go to the part where they buzz you into the door, and you can't get out until they buzz you out. And it was still, again, mistaken identity. I said, but I was here last week. And it's like, and I'm here this week. And and then I was coming up for another, I think I was coming up to Niagara Falls Comic Con the next week. And I got the same thing again. And
wow.
I said, could you tell me what this person did or who this person is or where I can maybe... I guess maybe look them up for you when I get back to Rochester, you know? Yeah. And then my last time I said, well, I'm coming back to go to another convention the next weekend. And I said, if you want, I could bring donuts, but they didn't stop me that way. But also that time is like each time is like, normally they take your fingerprints for your passport. Right. So my fingerprints are there. Well, we need a new set of fingerprints. So they electronically took my fingerprints there. And then the next week, they took another picture of me, even though I had my pictures in my passport. They got another picture of me then. So that's just like, yeah, I understand. I was coming back from somewhere. And in my laptop bag, I have a little diecast Thunderbird 1. But when you send it through, it looks like a bullet.
Oh.
So they stopped it and said, oh, what is this? It's like, it's Thunderbird 1. See, it's got a rubber point on it. It's not a metal point. It's die-cast, but it's not a real weapon or anything. It's a toy. It's that you just use it when I just take it with me, you know, international rescue, you know, for when I'm traveling. It's like, it's nice to have a little thing.
Yeah.
That's all I did.
Okay, I'm going to go back to our little Q&A there, Wayne. It's my fault for taking us way off path there, but what's your all-time genre TV episode?
Episode. I don't know. Episode, there's a lot of Babylon 5 episodes I like. They just showed Measure of a Man the other day on for Next Gen. They showed, Duh. It fits in with Black History Month. DS9's episode where he plays where Sisko and all the guys are 1950s science, 60s science fiction writers. Forgot about that one. Yeah, that one. That's an excellent episode. Can't remember the name of it, but that's an excellent episode. Can't remember the name.
Yeah, it was something Beyond the Stars.
Beyond the Stars, yes, that's it. Yeah.
Yep.
Far Beyond the Stars.
Far Beyond this. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great episode.
Yeah, incredible, because it said so much about the time and where we are and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, yeah, what's your favorite genre movie there?
My favorite genre movie is Superman the movie. That's what got me, because I collect comics, and back then I collected, like, everything, all kinds of comics. I had some Marvels, I had some DCs and everything. When Superman the movie came out, I said, this allowed me to focus onto just Superman. So I sold off all my other stuff. I traded, really, because I traded for Silver Age Superman. So
nice.
It's like, and I just became an avid Superman fan from then on.
Oh, excellent. I'm a big Bizarro guy. I would love to have some of those Silver Age Bizarros.
Oh, there's the new Action Comics this month is Bizarro.
Are really trying to get me in there, aren't you? Yeah. And again, I don't have the room to store it. So, David, can you go for me? And then, that's a cover.
Yeah.
That's a great cover, man. Although I will fess up. I did buy the Wonder Woman number one relaunch from a couple of like a month or so ago, as well as there was I think a number one Howard the Duck, or no, there was a Howard the Duck standalone. Yeah.
It might have been because Marvel's been doing facsimiles. They've been redoing all their old books that nobody can afford. They've just been reprinting them for like $5 an issue. It's exactly the same issue, just new.
Right.
$5. You can afford it now. So yeah. Alpha Flight number one, they redid that. So,
but do you get the Twinkies ads?
I don't know. I think you might.
I want my Twinkies ads and my Evel Knievels. Yeah, I want those in there.
I remember I saw one where you see O.J. Simpson pushing running shoes.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
So, yeah.
I know that's the thing that I miss with like omnibus collections is like,
yeah, they have no ads. Like,
and no Marvel bullpens, I think, right? They don't reprint that stuff. It's just the story. And just for me, so much of vintage comics is about that stuff.
And a lot of the new comics they don't have a lot of ads in the new comics. It's just there's an ad in like this one, there's a Hellblazer ad, but there's not a lot of stuff in them now. And it's like a one page, quarter page, one column thing, but there's not a lot of stuff. No letter page like there used to be in the old days.
Yeah.
We get sidetracked easy.
Yes. Yeah, that's all right. That's all right. I figure it's all track. It's all track out there. Right?
So somewhere it's okay. Along the way, it's a trip, and it's just a winding trip that you're going to take.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say something. We'll probably edit this out about the idea of O.J. Simpson pushing running shoes.
Yeah.
the idea that you have to actually, they're handy, especially if you have to run. But we'll just cut that out.
What was the shoes that, those Italian shoes that he had at the thing? I forgot. There was some fancy Italian.
So like a Gucci or something?
Something like that.
Yeah.
but for the comics, they were just like AAU shoes.
Yeah, I remember those.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember them for sure. Like I can see it. I can't remember who it was. Like it wasn't Nike, because Nike wasn't the thing yet, really.
No.
But oh god, it's gonna bug me now. Anyway, I'll have to go pull out a comic. Maybe maybe it's in my Justice League here. Probably not though.
No,
anyway.
It might not be.
Yeah.
Hi, listeners. This is Troy, the post-production version of Troy. I just want to clear up the vagueness of this. Apparently, in 1980, O.J. Simpson did cartoon ads in comic books for a brand called Spot Built Athletic Shoes. So now we know. Thank you.
Well, let's get back on track. So on to Black Superheroes. We're glad to have an episode in recognition, as we said earlier, Black History Month, and we're glad to be doing this episode with Wayne. For when we always like when we do an episode is to, you know, ask the guest about their first experience of the show topic. So I was just wondering, Wayne, how you sort of became familiar, like who was your first or your favorite Black superhero?
Favorite would probably have to be Black Lightning. I've got the first set of all 12 or 13 issues of Black Lightning from the 70s. And then back in the 70s, there was an episode, there was an issue of Lois Lane where she decided to become black for a day. And it's kind of like DC doesn't do well with stuff like that, at least definitely back then. But hey. It, Lois Lane being black on the cover of is Lois Lane issue number 106. I now have two of those.
And she has like an afro, doesn't she, in it?
Yeah, she has an afro. Yeah. And it's like it goes Lois Lane number 1, Lois Lane number 70, Lois Lane number 106 for value. It's like the third most expensive Lois Lane book that there is. It might even be the second most expensive Lois Lane book. No, the first appearance of Silver Age Catwoman, Lois Lane number 70 is probably more expensive. But yeah, that's the third most expensive issue of Lois Lane you could find. And it was just her deciding, would Superman love her if she was black? So he took her to the fortress, put her in the black machine, and turned her black. And so she got to live out the day as a black woman. She got snubbed for picking up a taxi and stuff like that. So yeah. So it's that's just the way it was back then.
Wow. Do you have something for this, David?
Yeah. For me, I guess it would have been comics. It would have probably been Blade. Comics is probably for me an early influence, and all depends on how you define a black or a superhero or someone who has powers.
Do they have to have powers?
I don't think so. I think if you're
maybe not,
like Batman doesn't have powers.
The grandfather of all superheroes, all black superheroes, Shaft.
Yeah.
That's where all black superheroes come from is Shaft, the 1970s Shaft.
Yeah, yeah. And as a result, I've actually become a Dolomite fan myself.
Oh, yeah, Dolomite. Yeah. I remember back in this, I lived in the inner city of Rochester back then. And there was a movie house that on Saturdays, you spent your 75 cents and they had movies on just repeat. You go in and you just spent your 75 cent, you watch like three or four movies, you watch a karate movie, a couple of black movies, and they just kept them running one after the other after the other.
Yep. And for any of our listeners who haven't seen the Eddie Murphy Netflix story about Rudy Ray Moore, you got to check it out. Then you will want to watch Dolomite as well, which is kind of need to do. I guess for me, Dave, it sort of is a quick two-part answer. One is I had from around 75, maybe earlier, one of the Marvel Treasury Edition Christmas comics with Luke Cage on the cover. And I think it's the first time I'd seen him. Also had Black Widow in it too. And I didn't know either character at the time. And I sort of just became mesmerized by Luke Cage. Like, I just thought he was such a cool looking character.
Afro,
like
the chains, the shirt.
Yeah, everything about it's like, man, who is this? Like, this is, and it's not like something man, blank man, you know? So yeah, Luke Cage has always been like one of my faves.
It was Luke Cage, Power Man.
Yeah, Power Man. And so probably pre that, by a couple of years, now, again, not necessarily like a black character, but Spidey on Electric Company with Morgan Freeman as Easy Reader, like that combo, like I loved.
My main man, Jay Arthur Crane. What it is?
Yeah, hi Ace. How's it going?
Everything's everything, old dude. Hey, what you doing?
What do you think I'm doing on the Electric Company? I'm reading. What would I be doing on the Electric Company? Shooting fish?
All right. What you reading?
What else? Spider-Man! Hey. He's my best.
I like him a lot myself. Say, listen, speaking of Spider-Man, guess who's going to be on the Electric Company?
Mason Reese?
No!
Why not? He's on everything else.
I know that. The man that's going to be on the Electric Company is none other than Spider-Man.
Get out of here. Easy, let me explain it to you. What? Spider-Man is like in a funny book. It's a cartoon guy, you know? I mean, he ain't a real person. It's just a drawing. You know what I mean?
Suit yourself, my man. Suit yourself. Listen, I got a jet on off here. Take my main squeeze in the library. You be cool. I'm
Yeah, you'll be cool.
You know, they put out the comic books that weren't Spider-Man in the actual Marvel continuity.
I think there is a black Spider-Woman in one of the Electric Company episodes.
Oh, that rings a bell.
Yeah.
That rings a bell, man. But that probably for me was the first time like that I associated the combination of, sort of Morgan Freeman as Easy Reader and he's with Spider-Man. And, you know, they're both teamed up in the books as well, too. So I thought that was really cool.
I think I even have a copy of, it was a Pizzazz, I think, or it was an Electric Company. That had Electric Company magazine, I think, everything.
Those are the ones that I keep trying to find.
Hard ones to find.
Yeah. I would love to have a run of Spideys.
The Electric Company Spideys.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are, everybody wants those. Cause those are made for kids. Like if they're made for kids, it's not like today when you go buy your comics today and, they got like 50 different covers and stuff like that. And people put them in bags and put them away.
Yeah.
And in 25, well, if it's a Marvel next week, it's doubled in price.
Right.
But if it's if it's anything else, it's like a year or two down the way, it's like worth a dollar.
Yeah. And you're right, man, because they probably did not make it into the 80s. Right. Cause little kids would have been reading them and like literally devouring them. Like they would have got shredded and whatnot.
One of the most expensive books right now nowadays is the first appearance of Harley Quinn, and that's in Batman Adventures number 12, and that's a book for kids, and the reason why it's expensive is Harley Quinn was there and that book was for kids, and kids bought it and read it, and adults wouldn't buy that book because it was for kids. So now people are looking for it and it's expensive, a really expensive book to get.
Now see, I'm lucky because I was actually buying for my kids at the time.
So you bought that.
Well, I'm trying to remember if I have it, because I kept thinking that Mad Love was the first thing, but you're right. It was actually in the series.
Yeah, Batman Adventures number 12.
So, Wayne, should we sort of go through some chronological things with the history of Black characters in comics? Would you like to approach it that way or what?
Well, there's Black characters in superheroes or just Black characters in comics?
Predominantly, staying within the superhero range, although I thought we should probably mention all Negro comics.
All Negro comics, but this is just it's just back in the day, they had there's like Negro romance, and all those books you can't really afford if you can find them. But this is an anniversary edition. This was part of the Kickstarter, and it contains all Negro comics number one. Oops. And it's a great book. And there's also Lobo. He was a Western character from in the 70s or 80s. I forgot what it was from. Mm-hmm. And a Black cowboy and, riding in the West. So that would kind of also be kind of a hero at the time.
Yeah.
And so...
And for folks who don't know about All Negro Comics, that came out 47, I believe, 1947.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was like
really short.
Everything about it is created by, Black creators, artists, writers, and published. And it was a single issue, wasn't it?
I think one or two is really okay. short. And the same thing with Negro Romance and all everything back then, because there wasn't the market in most places. Where were you going to sell it, really?
Yeah, right.
Because there was basically very little distribution. You'd sell it, you'd go to the neighborhood and sell it in every neighborhood. That's how you'd get it sold.
Yeah. Now, I've got a question about a character that I don't know a lot about, but you might have some information on. I know that in 1934, we had the comic strip Mandrake with Lothar, who's basically like a black sidekick, but with a very similar backstory to Black Panther, right? In that he was an African prince, and he's super strong, and he's set up not as we get later on with almost like comic relief with a black character. You know, this guy is pretty much Mandrake's equal.
I don't know much about it because I don't know much about it, but I do know that there was a lot of black characters back then weren't really, they were all sidekicks or comic relief. Captain Marvel has a character, can't remember his name, but he had the big lips and the dark skin, and he was basically comic relief, and they kind of sloughed him off to the side after a while. The same thing like with Green Lantern's character Pipe. They kind of sloughed him off, they changed him around in the movie when they came out with the movie, and they made him a real character, but it's like, well, I was wondering how they're gonna do him. they're trying to give people of color at least a little bit of presence in movies today.
It's you know, to look back on it and see these kind of I guess horrific depictions, you know, like physically of people of color, or basically just non-white characters,
right?
Because I mean, I guess partly I'm not looking for an excuse. It's awful, but like what happened for a long time, I think, was with the war, you know, Asians were vilified. And so they could get away with that for a little bit longer than maybe they might have without that. But yeah, I mean, you see some of these images and it's just like, it's horrific. It's grotesque. Where do we want to go next? Do we want to jump up to like, you know, the sort of quote unquote, the first real black superheroes of like Black Panther and Falcon?
Yeah, and I would think I think it was Black Panther appeared in, was it, he was in Jungle Action, a few Jungle Action issues, and then he was in Fantastic Four, and I think it was Fantastic Four 52?
In 1966, yeah.
And then there was Avengers 84, and yeah. And there was one issue of Avengers where they're choosing the new lineup, and Hawkeye is upset that he can get chosen, but Black Panther got chosen, and it's like, and whoever the guy was in charge of running, like Maxwell Lord for the Avengers, he said, well, you know, we have to have a black person on the team, so you can't be on the team. And they picked Black Panther instead.
Well, because you can only have one, right?
Well,
I guess that's the idea.
Yeah.
And so what would you attribute sort of that, you know, all of a sudden we have, I guess, in 69 Falcon and starting with 66 Black Panther. Mm-hmm. Is this, you know, sort of purely civil rights era, and it's like a daily thing for you know, clearly black folks would have loved a black superhero much earlier, but by this point we're talking about color issues all the time in 66 to 69,
and Marvel's always kind of been a little bit ahead of the curve on that, you know, way more than DC. Like I said, DC had the I want to be black for the day type thing.
until they got
John Stewart, who was now basically the definitive Green Lantern.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, Marvel was aware that they had so many college age students, so they couldn't like speak down to them. And DC was just still thinking about their audience being children. Mm-hmm. So they wrote to that level. Yeah. But you just touched on Jon Stewart. And I was going to say, actually, that DC felt like didn't get mature until Miller, but that's not true.
There was the drug books, the Neil Adams.
The Neil Adams and Denny O'Neill books, right?
Yeah, my wards on heroin, and he showed him with a needle in his arm. it was cool.
Can you talk a little bit to sort of that launch of Jon Stewart as Green Lantern? In 71?
Well, again, it's the whenever, at the time, it was whenever Hal Jordan was out, they needed somebody to cover the quadrant. And in reality, it was Guy Gardner.
Ooh.
And then everybody knows him as the One Punch Guy.
Yeah.
Jon Stewart and Hal Jordan. And whenever Hal Jordan's out, then Jon Stewart would become Green Lantern. And it was a good idea, but they didn't really use him a lot because it was like 99% of the stories were Hal Jordan was here. So he didn't show up. He showed up like for Christmas kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Wasn't there a period towards the 80s where he was more primarily the featured Green Lantern, or am I just misremembering?
There's that? Green Lantern. He had his own series for a while called Green Lantern Mosaic.
Yeah.
And and for a while he was after, I must say that was in the 90s or is it 2000s when the Justice League cartoon came out. And yeah. he became the Green Lantern of the series now, more so now than Hal Jordan. Hal Jordan's usually like, Hal Jordan's out, so Jon Stewart's a Green Lantern now.
So. You know, this is probably a good point to talk a little about Dwayne McDuffie if we're talking about Justice League and whatnot.
Static, so he created the Milestone. He along with a few others created Milestone Comics. Yeah, so. And they did Static, Icon, Hardware, Rocket, Icon, Blood Syndicate, Zombie, a whole bunch of black heroes in the 2000s.
And while Dwayne McDuffie was involved with Justice mm-hmm. League and Justice League Unlimited.
And Static Shock.
Yeah, but with those two, he wrote, he either wrote, produced, or story edited 69 of the 91 episodes.
Yes.
Which was great having that, and I don't mean this as a pun, but under his stewardship, because we got to see more Jon Stewart. And I think for a generation, Jon Stewart became the Green Lantern.
Mm-hmm.
But, okay, let's talk about Static a bit. Because I was only familiar with the animated version, which was, mm-hmm. I guess, on Kids WB when my kids were watching the other shows as well, and they would watch that. But do you want to tell us a little bit about the character Static?
Well,
in the comic,
all the Milestone books, like DC, all their black heroes only did stuff in the ghetto, which is kind of weird, but. And the same thing with all the Milestone books. It's like Static Shock, Hardware, Icon. Icon is the black version of Superman. Hardware is the black version of Iron Man. But they all work basically in the ghetto. and they have like most of it started with an explosion that they were using some new toxic chemical on a gang fight. And that turned bang babies. That turned everybody into a lot of people who were there into bang babies. Static got his powers from there. Icon was Superman, so he came from another planet to Earth. He came and stayed through slavery. So he's a superhero who lived through slavery to today. So he doesn't age that much either. I didn't think about that. So he doesn't age like normal. Yeah, he's an alien.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of superheroes in the Marvel, in the DC. Blood Syndicate was a gang. And they got their powers from there, from the big, from the they became Bang Babies. And they decided that they're going to take care of their neighborhood and do stuff in their neighborhood. So, yeah, it's like Milestone is a great series of books. I've got some here. I've got some of the new, like this is a Blood Syndicate issue. This was their the Milestone 30 years of comics from Milestone. 30. Mm. I didn't even think it was 30 years ago.
Wow.
God. Yeah, 90s. Yeah. 30 years. It's been a long time.
Yeah. As you, you know, we were talking a minute ago too about Justice League mm-hmm. and in the animated world. And I was trying to remember who the actor was who voiced Martian Manhunter. And so wow. I checked it out and it's Carl Lumbly.
Yes.
So
he was in one of the Star Treks.
Yep.
If I remember right. Yeah.
Yeah. And so he did Martian Manhunter on Justice League Unlimited mm-hmm. and Static Shock.
Mm-hmm.
But he also portrayed TV's first black superhero Mantis.
Mm. Ah, yes.
Which is like, holy crap, how important is Carl Lumbly to all of this? And as a Stephen King fan, he played Dick Halloran in Mike Flanagan's Doctor Sleep.
You seem distracted today.
It's Calvin. I caught him playing Mantis again.
Seems harmless enough. I might enjoy playing Mantis. But if I were his age.
It's not the way I'm bringing him up, that's all. Violence met with violence leading to more violence.
Maybe you misunderstand him. I thought the idea of Mantis was to stop the violence.
No, Miles. It's all part of the same cycle. I don't want him exposed to it. I don't want him growing up in that kind of world.
What other kind is there?
A safe world where people don't hate and hurt each other. Where he can feel secure and loved.
I used to live in a world like that. There was only one problem with it.
What's that?
It didn't exist. Tomorrow, then?
I'll see you tomorrow.
I at this last Astronomicon, I showed some episodes of Mantis. I guess it was like, oh yeah, I got Mantis. It's like, I should show some Mantis. I also showed, I was going to show Shaft, but I couldn't get a copy of Shaft in time.
Mm. Oh, no.
Shaft. Yeah, talking heroes, so you got to have Shaft, too.
Yeah, no,
great,
I know.
Great theme,
but
too.
I did show Static Shock. I showed the Black Panther animated series. Yeah, there's lots of stuff. Oh, I also showed, like I said, there's a TV series called Naomi. She's a black superhero. It lasted one season. I knew it was only going to last one season on CW. Then there was Tom Swift, like the old book series of the Tom Swift, you know, and his magic, not magic, and his technical, whatever technical device it is he built every year because he's a genius. So they did a new version of it and made him black.
Okay.
That lasted one season. Yeah, the season.
Well, I still have a copy of Tom Swift and his Repelatron Skyway.
Yes. Yes. And then there's always Black Lightning, the TV series, where you got Black Lightning, Thunder and Lightning, and Tobias Whale, and all the superheroes from the ghetto, kind of, basically. Because even in that one Justice League, they wanted him to join, but he didn't. Black Lightning didn't want to join because there's lots of stuff happening on in the neighborhood that he has to take care of, and they're just different.
Yeah.
But in Young Justice, which is on a new series, which is just as good as Justice League Unlimited, he's one of the Heroes in Justice League.
Is it that one animated or live action? Because animated. There's two sort of Teen Titans shows. One is live action and one is not. And
No. This is an animated series on it's called Young Justice Great Series.
Yeah.
It's basically all like cohort, all the sidekicks, you know. And it's Teen Titans, but it's a better version of Teen Titans.
Now, David mentioned as one of his favorite or earliest black superhero memories, Blade. Did you want to talk a little bit about Blade, both the comics and the film series?
I like the film series. Film series was great. I know the comics somewhat, but I'm not a big Marvel person. I'm a DC person. But like I said, they couldn't. I know the new Blade, the new series that they may or may not do. Well, at least they have plans on doing it, but you never know when it's going to come out. I would hope that they at least have Wesley Snipes in there as a walk-on or something.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but sometimes they never do stuff like that. But in the movie series, it's a great movie series.
Well, I don't know if you watch What We Do in the Shadows, but there was an episode, I think, in season one where there was a vampire council and they had Wesley Snipes zooming into the vampire council meeting because they were suggesting that he's an actual vampire.
And, well, he is.
Yeah. And anyway, I thought that was a great little touch having him as part of it. Hilarious show.
That's a show. There's so many shows, and that's one of the ones I wanted to watch.
Yeah, right. Too many. I know. I've been trying to get Fargo going, and I something keeps coming up. Yeah. But and I guess again, not superheroes, but we could even talk about Fargo season 4. But that's again probably another day.
But like I said, Blade 2. Blade was an excellent movie. Blade 2 was good. They've all been great. I like them all.
Chris Christopherson in a supporting role. Norman Reedus is very cool because before he became famous on The Walking Dead, he had a good role in the second. I forgot this because I watched Blade again, and Sanaa Lathan is the main woman that ends up getting bitten. He's trying to help her out and all that kind of stuff. And she went on to be a major character in Alien versus Predator. where she was bringing the people out on the, and she was an expert on how to survive in the winter and all that stuff. One thing I just wanted to say, because we're probably getting nearer to the end, and we did want to ask you about your favorite Catwoman, but one of the things that I find watching a film, because there was all that time during the Avengers when Nick Fury would show up at the end of the film, because they were all leading towards in a big Avengers film. So at the end of each standalone, at the end of the credits, Nick Fury would show up and ask whoever it was about the Avengers initiative. So whenever I watch a film, even today, I wait until the end of the credits, hoping that Nick Fury will show up and ask Barbie or Oppenheimer or Wonka to join the Avengers initiative. It's just a hope that I have.
That would be cool, because I could see him asking Oppenheimer to be like the new Reed Richards of the universe, of the Marvel universe, and that would be cool.
Right,
or Barbie as the new Black Widow. Yeah.
That would be very cool.
Yeah, that would work.
Now, I know that, probably essential to our discussion and where things have gone in the past, say, 20 years, is just the idea of representation on screen. And I mean, again, David and I, two white guys, so there's not much we can add there, because it's not like there's been a lack of white guys on screen before. But I'll say, as a Canadian, it always used to frustrate me, where it's like, why are we just dealing with America? Like, don't they know that there's a country just north of the border here? And so
I consider like us down here in Rochester, I consider us Southern Ontario.
Yeah. I've always said Maine should be a part of Canada too.
Yeah.
But I was so happy the day that Captain Canuck came out in 1975. And it was like, finally, it's a Canadian character and set in places like Ottawa and Toronto. Of course, we later got Wolverine and Alpha Flight, which was awesome. Yeah. But it was nice that finally there was something there. Anyway, that's it for me. Like, poor me as a white Canadian guy. Get the little violin out, I know. But let's talk about representation. It's amazing now that, you know, we've had people like A-list actors, like Will Smith as Deadshot, Idris Elba as Bloodsport, Halle Berry, both as Storm and Catwoman. So repping both.
Nobody who likes her as Catwoman.
I know, but I mean.
It was a really bad movie.
It was. But still, it's a very nice looking DVD cover.
Oh, yeah. Say.
Yeah. You know,
and it won a bunch of Razzies.
Yeah, there you go. And sometimes a bad film is much more enjoyable than a decent film.
Oh, were we talking about the Fast and Furious movies earlier?
Exactly.
Oh, another set, if you want to watch bad movies, The Expendables.
Mm. Yeah, well.
That's another set of just bad movies.
Yeah.
Not bad movies, but you get all the action heroes together in a movie. You got Jean-Claude Van Damme. You got everybody, Stallone, Statham. Everybody's in there, and they're all being.
Them.
Even got Arnold in them.
Yeah. It's like an all-star team.
Yeah.
Hey, we even got, you know, we now have like Samuel L. Jackson as Nick Fury, which, you know, say 20 years ago.
I still kind of like the one with Hasselhoff, the Hasselhoff Nick Fury.
Why don't I remember that? What is hold on, refresh my memory here.
David Hasselhoff was Nick Fury, agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.
They did a
movie.
Yeah.
Him and Renna. What's her name?
Lisa Renner?
Yeah. Yeah.
Back in the '80s, I think.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Something like that.
Oh, it was.
Wow. Okay. I have to look for that.
He had the eye patch and everything. And the cigar. And the cigar. This was back before you can smoke in comics and stuff. After some little kid said that Marvel's hero shouldn't be smoking, they got rid of smoking. Even though Wolverine can smoke because he's got the healing factor, but they just got rid of smoking. Mm-hmm. And so they changed everybody's look.
Well, I do think we need to address David's question, Wayne, about your favorite Black Catwoman.
I have to, out of the three there, I'd have to say Eartha Kitt. Because she was Catwoman. She just seemed to be Catwoman. Although Zoe Kravitz was pretty good in this last one, I'd have to say Eartha Kitt was number one for Catwoman, then probably Zoe Kravitz, and then Halle Berry more for Storm.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, a great Storm.
Mm-hmm.
Anything you want to touch on before we head towards the finish line?
I don't think so, because I can just talk about anything and everything, and next thing I know, oh, I did like Amanda Waller in The Wall.
Oh.
In Suicide Squad, and what's the one with John Cena? The wrestler
was. Oh, a Peacemaker.
Peacemaker, yes.
Oh, same Amanda Waller?
Same Amanda Waller.
Nice.
Yes. And she's going to be in everything in this new DC universe.
That's right, because she's, I guess, I might be wrong. I think I'm conflating. I was going to say, I think she was at the end of the recent Shazam, but I don't think she was. I think it was like her underlings went to recruit Cap. Oh, I almost said Captain Marvel. I'm a bad boy. Shazam.
It was Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
The
big red cheese.
It's not the big red cheese. Even though he's not Captain Marvel, I still think I'm a Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Oh, hey, let me ask you, what do you think of the... it's been gone for a little bit now, but the Watchmen series. I just rewatched
The Watchmen series.
Yeah.
Excellent. I like how they started off with the reparation stuff. And it was really good.
Yeah, I'm going to do a rewatch now. I just did the first two episodes yesterday.
Yeah.
And I don't think that I ever finished it for whatever reason.
It's a good series. And it ties into the, you know, it definitely ties into a movie because everybody's there in some form.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the thing about anything that's done now. It's like it has to somehow exist, you know, in a not post, but in a Black Lives Matter world.
Right.
So as a result, the stories are super intense. Like I'm always blown away, even Lovecraft Country. I find them so intense because of their connection to reality.
Yeah.
That,
cause it's like, it's a comic book movie. Well, that's so set. So we, like with most speculative fiction, we can put reality in here. And people won't care because it kind of is just a fantasy type thing, but we'll just put some reality in it to slap people in the face.
Yeah. And then it's like, oh, we know what this is really about, you know, and that's good. Yeah. I like that in my fiction anyway. That's why I like the Twilight Zone. I like the fact that you don't have to get into a lot of world building. This is the world we know and something is going weird with it.
Oh yeah. I like every incarnation of Twilight Zone. Some, like everything, some episodes are better than some other episodes, but it's still a great series because they all add up. They're all enough of every season to be good. There's not episodes that make it good. And there's 156 of the original ones, and I'm only like 10 away from having them all. So, I've seen them all. So.
Yeah. I haven't seen a lot of the Forrest Whitaker ones, but I
remember those.
I love the 80s ones. I need to buy the Forrest Whitaker ones.
Buy them before everything disappears.
Yeah, I know. Because I'm a physical media guy. So yeah, like I want my stuff.
It's hard to find. And like I said, with I got a copy of Naomi. Because I figured it's only one season, so I got me a copy of Naomi. I got a copy of Tom Swift. I try to get copies of stuff I like because it's like you can't find it anywhere else. It's like Naomi, I don't even think it's streaming anywhere right now. And it should be either on CW or Max, but it's not. And Naomi has a whole big thing about. The first episode is Superman's having a fight over the town and she runs a Superman blog. So it's like, it's a big DC part and Hawkman's in it. A version of Hawkman.
Mm.
So yeah. It's a pretty good series. Well, it only lasted one season. So as good as you can get with one season. I know it weren't going to be that long. Especially since it was at the time where when CW got sold and HBO bought Max and they got rid of the Barbara Gordon movie, Batgirl movie, and Batwoman. Yeah. Batwoman. That's a three season series too. Batwoman.
Yeah, I think she's the Batwoman for 2 and 3.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she showed up in the season finale in the series, this last series of Flash episodes.
Yeah, CW kind of shortchanged all of those when they wrapped up the whole Arrowverse, which is too bad because there was a lot of good stuff there for a number of years.
Hey, even what's his name made an appearance in like this last season of Flash, Stephen Amell.
Yeah.
He came back as the Spectre. It's like, I still want to see him in the green cloak and the white. But they aren't doing superhero. It's like in the first X-Men movie. What do you expect? Yellow spandex? Yeah.
Give it to me.
It's going to be the Deadpool movie now.
Should we put a bow on it, Dave?
Yeah, I think we've covered a lot. There's a limit to how much one can cover in just one episode. But I'm glad that we were able to cover what we did. And Wayne, thank you so much for being our guest.
No, no problem. I got my dog here. He's zonked out on the after I gave him a couple of treats, he just decided to go take a nap.
Yeah, mine's behind me too. Yeah. Well, thanks for joining us. It was great to actually meet you, Wayne.
Yeah, cool. It's cool being on.
Yeah.
Please remember to catch us on all your favorite podcast providers, folks, whatever you listen to. I tend to go to Spotify these days, but you can go to our website at 2numeric2of.ca and interact as much as you like with us on Facebook at 2 Old Farts Talk Sci-Fi. Nothing numeric there, all just words. Please tell a friend, like and subscribe, and all of those wonderful things.
I am David Klink.
And I'm Troy Harkin.
See you all for our next episode of 2 Old Farts
Talk Sci-Fi.